This podcast contains adult themes and language, and some of the things that we discuss may be disturbing to some listeners. In this podcast, we discuss sexual assault, torture, race, and murder. Listener discretion is advised. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Fruit Loop Season 2, Episode 15, Fiddleen. Thank you so much for listening. If you play dominoes, you get that reference. Fruit Loops is a podcast about true crimes committed by people of color and their victims that we don't hear or know much about. Now, contrary to popular belief, not all serial killers are white dudes. What? There are many well-documented cases of serial killers of color, and Fruit Loops is a podcast all about them. We will take deep dives into the fascinating lives and crimes of serial killers of color and the victims that the media and entertainment commonly leave out because the news is racist, allegedly.
And we are Wendy and Beth. She's Wendy. I'm Beth. We're not journalists, investigators, or psychologists. Just a couple of gals interested in true crime. Also, The opinions expressed in this podcast are just that, our opinions. Please send any questions or comments to fruitloopspod@gmail.com, or you can leave us a voicemail at 602-935-6294, and we may feature it on a future episode. Yay. Also, our website is fruitloopspod.com, our Facebook page is Fruit Loops Pod, and our discussion group is Fruit Loops Pod Discussion on Facebook. We are also on Twitter and Instagram at Fruit Loops Pod.
Now, if you want to support the show, you can send us a donation on the Cash App, yes, thank you, which you can download to your phone or you can find online at cash.me/$FruitLoopsPod, or you can become a monthly patron through our Podbean patron page. Or if you can't help monetarily, no problem. You can always give us a 5-star review on iTunes or anywhere else you get your podcasts from. And be sure to share our podcasts with all of your friends. So who are we talking about today, Beth?
Today we are talking about Delmas Colvin. He was a long-haul trucker who was convicted of killing 5 women, but who is suspected of killing many more.
Oh, me, oh, my. I can't wait to get into it. So, how you doing?
Well, I just got back from vacation, and I'm exhausted. I don't know why I go on vacation, because...
It's supposed to relax you.
Yeah, it's not relaxing, but it's super fun. We walked anywhere between about 15,000 to 21,000 steps every day. Shout out to Fitbits.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
Airborne.
Yeah. So we were going all day long. And like I said, it was super fun. But yeah, cool. I'm exhausted. I didn't have any time to work on the podcast last week. So shout out to Wendy, who did all the work last week. You get all the hip hop air horns.
You know what? This feels inappropriate, but I'm going to do it.
Do it. Do it. I am so grateful that you were able to handle everything while I was gone.
Woo, Beth. We would really be in hell without you. I mean, this show cannot exist without Super Beth. I'm telling you guys, on so many levels. But it was, first of all, Beth showed me how to do the editing, which I'm not very good at, but
Oh yeah, you're fine.
I hope that last week's episode was okay for y'all. If it was terrible, it's my fault. But I did the best that I could, and
you did great.
I am so glad that you just got to enjoy yourself and have a good time and not worry about it, and that you like trusted me not to fuck things up too much. And I'm so glad that you are back.
Yeah, me too.
Not only did I miss you podcast wise, I also missed you like office wise, because the coffee was terrible. When I say homeless man's urine, that's what it tasted like.
Oh, God.
You know, not that I know that's from bad experience, like, don't judge
me. But just,
me.
You can imagine.
Just know.
You can imagine.
Yeah, you can imagine. It was not up to par. And so, like, and oh my gosh, it was like, I'm trying to think. Like, I'd like walk by your desk, like, with tears, like, is she coming back?
Come back.
Welcome to the hotel, California. It's such a lonely place. It's such a lonely place. That's what it was like every time I walked past your desk. So I'm so happy you're back.
Yay.
Okay, so I'm stupid. Anyway, happy Black History Month, everybody.
Woo.
Yes. Okay. So let's take a deep breath in, because this Black History Month has been off to a not great start. What the fuck is going on with people in Virginia, specifically the politicians elected into office? Blackface?
Yeah.
Shoe polish on the face? And they're admitting to it like it was okay at some point.
Like it was nothing. Yeah.
Now, if you're listening to this show, I'm sure you're woke enough. Blackface has never been okay. The problem is that people have not listened to Black people when they've said that. And so in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, when people were showing up to work on Halloween with paint on their face, it was not okay then. It's not okay now. It's never been okay. So
so don't do that.
Don't do it. Also, what the fuck happened to Liam Neeson? He was my TV dad, my on-screen dad, and now it turns out he's kind of got racist tendencies, but doesn't realize that it's not okay. So that's disturbing.
Sad. But yeah.
Very sad. Very sad. The good parts of February so far have been, so Beth and I, we blackified the shit out of our company break room, which is getting great reviews. So
and
I'm very,
so
very
good.
Proud
yeah.
about that.
We
that
were a little worried good. About that, but we got great reviews.
What we did was we put up pictures and stats and facts and figures of important Black people, modern ones, historic ones. We did Henry Brooks Brown. We did Judge Thurgood Marshall. We did Frederick Douglass. But we also did Beyonce and Meghan Markle. So we did a little bit of everything. And so far, people seem to be really like receptive to it, which is pretty dope. Also, good thing that happened this Black History Month is Stacey Abrams. She did her rebuttal speech after the so-called quote-unquote State of the Union that Nine did. So I've been trying to figure out a little bit about my history. And as you all know who are listening, I'm half Central American. So people on my mother's side were not enslaved people, but people on my father's side, who is an African American gentleman, were enslaved. And so I was trying to figure out like who was the last slave in our lineage, because I always hear like white dudes are like, well, my great grandfather, like, you know, like, I don't know, built a peanut factory, or like,
right,
I don't know. People are always talking about like things that their great grandfathers did. Well, guess what? my great grandfather was a slave. So take that and shove it up your ass. Anyway, so this Black History Month has been a little rocky, to say the least. And I am staying prayerful. I'm praying regularly and being hopeful that things will turn around. Who knows? Maybe Black Panther 2 will come out. I don't know. Maybe Oprah will come and visit me for lunch. I don't know, but I'm just hoping for more.
Something great could happen.
Something great could happen this Black History Month. So I'm not holding out hope, okay? So now we are going to get into some listener letters. Oh, hang on. Oh, God, I'm so unprepared.
Gotta wait for the angels.
I know. We have to have the angels deliver this mail for us. Please forgive me. Okay, here they are. Here they are.
Hey, angels.
Oh, what?
Thank you so much, angels.
Oh, what a relief. All right, so what do we got, Ben?
I got a real short one. This one is from Nicole, who said, "You guys are amazing. Love listening to the podcast. Keep it up." Thank you, Nicole.
Oh.
Hip hop air horn to you.
Oh, yes. In all its glory. That was a double time. There you go.
All right.
Well, I have a message from Courtney Ralph on Instagram. She said, "Hey, Wendy and Beth. Just wanted you to know I love your podcast. I started off with your recent episodes about a month ago, and I've just started listening to you from season one, episode one. It's grown a lot, and I love it." By the way, thank you for acknowledging our growth.
Thank you. Yeah.
yes, I'm going to give you a hip-hop air horn.
I cannot listen to the old one, so thank you for taking one for the team.
Additionally, Courtney said, "Keep doing what you're doing. There needs to be more women like you too. P.S. Love the section where you catch up on how you've been in the last week." That's the "how you doing?" And yeah, keep it up.
Thank you.
Oh, yes. We love it. Can't wait for the next ep. Also, I need a t-shirt that says, "Look alive, guys. It's crazy out there." Miss Courtney, we could not agree more with you. And we do need some t-shirts. they're on the way.
Yeah, we're working on it.
We're getting there. Our little show is growing. So stay tuned. They will come someday. But in the meantime, we love you, girl, and we're going to give you all of the hip hop air horns. Yes, ma. All right. Additionally, we got a new patron. What?
Right on. All right.
Woo. Hey. She goes by Jag Tech on Podbean. And what the heck, Jag Tech? And thank you so freaking much for supporting our show. Keep an eye out for your merch and all the hip hop air horns to you, our love. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for supporting our show.
Yes. Thank you so much. Yes. And while we're talking about patrons, I wanted to mention here that I think we have finally figured out how to work in some extra episodes for you guys. Our Ooh. Biggest enemy has been time. And trying to figure out how to do everything that we want to do, because we really want to do more in the small amount of time that we have available to us. And we've been wanting to do some extra episodes for you guys, but we haven't been able to do it. But I think we've got it figured out. So stay tuned for that.
Oh, yes. Yes, please. And thank you so much for sticking with us. We will get there.
Yeah, it's going to take us a while to figure everything out, but we're getting there.
By the way, did you heard that Spotify just closed a deal with Gimlet Media, which is a huge podcast company that's been around for, I think, 10 years.
Oh, wow.
Spotify is really coming after this podcast business game.
Wow, I didn't know that.
And it's just really cool that we are in this space and that there's really exciting things happening. So
yeah,
thanks for sticking with us. Who knows where we'll be, you know, a year from now, but it's exciting. So
it is.
Let's take a quick ad break and we will get to the story when we come back. We would like to invite any listeners who have a business to advertise to do it with us. For more information, please email us at fruitloopspod@gmail.com or check out our website at fruitloopspod.com. So, why don't you introduce our subject again, Beth?
As we mentioned, our subject is Delmas Colvin, who was a long-haul trucker convicted of killing 5 women, but is suspected of killing many more from New Jersey to Ohio, beginning in the late 80s and from 2000 to 2005.
All right, so now we got to get into my favorite part. It really gets my jollies. It really yanks my crank. time for the stats. All right. So Mr. Colvin killed at least 7 women. His first murder was in 1987. And from 2000 to 2005 is when he killed 6 or more women. He was apprehended on November 20th, 2005. His crimes occurred in New Jersey and in Ohio of the United States of America. And his modus operandi was strangulation and suffocation. Now, his current status is he pled guilty to the murders. He was sentenced to 2 life sentences without the possibility of parole on October 2nd, 2006. His victims were sex workers, and he wasn't selective of race at all, as most of his victims were white females, and only one that I know of was a Black woman. And we've discussed this before, but most serial killers kill people of their own race, and it has to do with proximity, obviously. So,
right.
Now we are going to get into the setting. So, take it away, Beth.
So, this occurred in Toledo, Ohio, mostly, beginning in the late 80s. Historically, Toledo, like many urban centers in Ohio, was an area where many escaped enslaved people or free persons of color settled, based on the location being further away from the southern slaveholding states.
Cleveland was similar in regards to its proximity away from southern areas, as well as central Ohio. Southern Ohio, the, you know, Cincinnati and Springfield and Dayton, to an extent, had very large Black populations starting in the mid-1800s, in particular because they were the first places that many free Blacks and escaped enslaved people settled during this time period due to being easier to get to from the South. Toledo is a city on the Great Migration Tour, and Mr. Colvin is a Great Migration baby.
Now, what I've noticed about these cities on the Great Migration Tour, especially in the Midwest, is that they seem to ignore why Black people migrated to those areas.
Mm-hmm.
And they give themselves awards for being diverse.
Mm-hmm.
And the census does say that they're diverse,
mm-hmm.
but they are actually quite segregated.
Trash. did I say that? Whoops. Whoops. apologies to you. If you are a Black person living in the Midwest, please get at us and tell us if we're missing something.
Yeah.
Because my impression is it is very segregated. And if you're not in just a Black community, like a homogenous Black community with Black businesses and everything you need is in this Black community, then you know, let me know. We could be totally wrong. So I've mentioned how the Midwest is a mystery to me in the past, but there are parts of the Midwest that are very, very Black that I don't know enough about, as I've said. Since we are talking about Ohio, I wanted to mention that the Ohio River was referred to as the River Jordan, enslaved people wanted to go north. So north, the goal was Canada, and it was viewed as like the promised land. So the Ohio River, aka River Jordan, was an important feature of the Underground Railroad and later the Great Migration. So I did want to point that out.
That's interesting because I was talking to my sister, and I've mentioned before that she lives in Canada and she's now a Canadian citizen,
mm-hmm.
and she had to take the citizenship test to become a Canadian citizen. And she actually learned a lot about American history when she took the Canadian citizenship test. Like the Underground Railroad, people, they were heading north. People think they were heading for northern states, but they were actually heading for Canada.
Right, right. Can your sister be my best friend? Because I would love to have a conversation with her about all of this stuff that she learned.
maybe we can have her on a special episode with Beth's sister.
That sounds great. Okay. Yeah, let's do it. So now we are going to get into the killer's early life, and I don't want to disappoint you, but Colvin was born on August 3rd, 1959. We don't know where. We don't know about his upbringing, if there was abuse or trauma. We couldn't find anything about his early life, his family history. So, listeners,
yeah,
I am sorry. I am trash.
No, we couldn't find anything. We tried.
We did.
Yeah. The earliest we could get to was the 80s when he was sentenced to 3 to 15 years in prison in 1989 for felonious assault and a weapons violation in Summit County. He was released on parole in 1992, but then sent back to prison in July 1993 for violating parole after being convicted of drug abuse charges. And then he was released in 1996.
All right. So now we are going to dive into the timeline. Now, in 1987, Colvin was working as a cab driver when he picked up Donna Lee White. She was 27 years old in Northfield, New Jersey. The two went back to his home. Colvin said he later left for a few minutes that night and returned to find White with a bloody syringe and blood on her arm, and that she was barely breathing.
Colvin said he did not think White was alive when he found her, which is funny because if she was barely breathing, then she must have been alive. But in any case, he said he put a bag over her head just in case she was still alive. And he said, without a doubt, that he killed her. He said he also sold drugs at the time of the incident, but did not say whether the drugs White injected were purchased from him or not. And I suspect that they were, because, you know, why else would he do all this?
Because that was bullshit.
Yeah.
Someone please call 911. Now, after placing the bag over her head and strangling her, Colvin said he left his apartment for an unknown amount of time before he returned home, wrapped Donna Lee in a blanket, put her in the trunk of his cab, and eventually dumped her body. White's body was found on September 15th, 1987 in a vacant parking lot in Atlantic City. Potty potty. That's where people go to party, right? Yeah.
Potty potty with a dead body.
Potty. Get Beth a job on the cast of Hamilton right now. Right now. Because she gets all of the hip hop air horns. There we go. Are you listening, Lin-Manuel Miranda? Are you listening?
He probably has way too much to do.
he's Mary Poppins and shit. But he's got all kinds of stuff.
Please listen. Anyway. So initially, the death of Donna Lee White was ruled acute cocaine intoxication. And we couldn't get a whole lot of information about this, but Colvin was charged with hindering apprehension and tampering with evidence. So apparently they believed that she had died of an OD, but that he had then dumped her body. And again, we couldn't get a lot of information about this. So as we mentioned earlier, he spent some time in prison between 1989 and 1996. Not sure if it had to do with this murder or probably not.
Well, this is the height of the war on drugs.
Right.
And so I wonder if that had more to do with his, like, they were more worried about him being involved with drugs than solving the murder.
Yeah.
a young woman.
Which they thought was an OD anyway, and they didn't give a shit. So,
Yeah.
I don't think it had to do with that.
What was it?
It was felonious assault and a weapons violation.
That's right.
Yeah. And then there were drug abuse charges later. So anyway, he spent some time in prison. And so there was a large gap in there where he committed no crimes that we know of because he was in jail.
But in 2000, the skeletal remains of Valerie Jones were found near the Ottawa River and Hoffman Road landfill. Valerie was 38 and she was a white woman. Although in all fairness, she could have been a woman of color, white passing. That was my impression when I saw her photo. Now, welcome to Culture Corner with Wendy and Beth. White passing is when a person of color has features that resemble more of a European beauty standard than that of their person of color roots. It's colorism, which is a controversial and touchy subject throughout the African diaspora and people of color throughout the world. An individual like my own kids, for example, may have the blackiest black of parent or the browniest brown of parent, but have light skin, light eyes, light or blonde hair, and people may never realize that they're people of color. And thus they may endure a certain amount of privilege, but also pain from their own communities of color. The literary trope is, they call it the tragic mulatto. They don't fit in the white culture or in their cultures of color fully. For example, you know, Drake, they call Drake soft because his skin is light. Basically, Drake's a pussy because his skin's light. but it's not true. It's not nice. And, you know, people have no idea that Vin Diesel or Rashida Jones are black people.
Yeah, I did not know that Vin Diesel was black. I did not know that.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And so, like, my daughter, I feel like she's a double agent. So, when she's older, like, I plan to send her out and, like, tell us what they say about
what
us.
What do they do? What do they say
about us when we're not around? Yeah. So, I'm training her up to send her out on missions. She's an incognito black girl. So anyway, that's a side note.
Yes. Okay. End culture corner.
Culture corner over.
Okay. So on August 5th, 2000, the skeletal remains of Dorothea Wetzel were found by a man walking his dog near the Maumee River in South Toledo. Dorothea, who also went by the last name Oviedo and was nicknamed Angel, was a white woman and a 40-year-old sex worker. Her body had been wrapped in a blanket and discarded in a desolate area.
On April 8th, 2002, Lily Summers' body was found. Lily was 43 years old and a black mother of two. Her body was found in a 45-foot tractor trailer behind B&B Repairs in Lake Township, Wood County.
Then on September 2nd, 2002, Jacqueline Thomas's body was found. Jacqueline was 42 and she was a white woman. Her body was found just across the Michigan line in Bedford Township.
Jackie Simpson, a 33-year-old white woman, the second eldest of five children, disappeared in mid-January 2003. She was the mother of two children and had been missing nearly 3 months before she was found on April 23, 2003, under bushes near a tanning business in Toledo, Ohio. Her mother, Judy Simpson, said that Jackie was a good person, even through her three-year addiction to crack cocaine.
Melissa Weber, 37, disappeared in early February of 2005 after she left the South Toledo home where she was staying. Nicholas Weber, the 19-year-old son of Ms. Weber and the eldest of her three children. He did not live with her, but he attempted to keep in nearly daily contact with her. And I surmise that he noticed that she was gone because he tried to keep in contact with her, and she wasn't around.
Yeah, I feel bad for Nicholas Weber. I mean, yeah, it's really hard to have a parent who is struggling with addiction, and as a child with a parent who's struggling with addiction, you're like
the parent.
I want my parent to be alive, but yes, but you're also like wrestling with like, do they love the substance more than they love me? Like, why can't they, you know? So I just feel really bad for Nicholas.
Acting like a parent, like trying to keep tabs on his mom, you know, where it's usually the mom who's keeping tabs on their kid, you know, it's sad.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it is really sad. None of these stories are happy stories.
Oh, yeah, so, these are not happy stories. Yeah, someday we'll do a happy story and it'll be really fucking boring.
We should do a story about Care Bears or My Little Ponies.
Unicorns.
I don't know if our listeners would dig
candy.
It.
Candy.
Yeah, they're going to have to go to a different podcast for that. So Melissa Weber was the mother of two daughters in addition to her son, Nicholas. Her daughters were ages 11 and 4, but she struggled with addiction to drugs, as we mentioned, particularly cocaine and crack. Family members said that she was trying to overcome her addictions.
But she was found on May 9th, 2005, in a vacant trucking terminal on Metzinger Road. Her decomposed body was wrapped in a purple comforter that had been bound with strips of a bedsheet. The linens were tagged with the logo of Toledo Budget Inn Motel. Her body was hidden under a vinyl turquoise couch.
Detectives with the Toledo Police Scientific Investigations Unit said Simpson and Weber appeared to have been dumped in the locations, which were about 2 miles apart.
In July of 2003 and April of 2004, there were two sexual assaults of Toledo women, ages 47 and 31. The women, who were also sex workers, survived their attacks.
So now we are going to discuss the investigation. Take it away, Beth.
Police had begun to suspect Colvin of a series of murders sometime after one of the sex workers told police some critical details following an attack by Colvin. During the assault, she actually urinated on the sheets in her attacker's truck cab in order to leave her DNA, which is really fucking smart.
Oh, absolutely. According to prosecutors, she thought he was going to kill her, and she was going to do everything she could do so that if they came looking for her, they'd find something. Additionally, she memorized details of the truck Colvin drove at the time, and investigators eventually matched her assailant's DNA with evidence in a string of rapes of local sex workers and to the murder of Melissa Weber. Ooh, we're getting somewhere.
Yeah. Then evidence taken from beneath Weber's fingernails matched Colvin's DNA, which was obtained as part of an investigation into the April 2nd, 2004 beating and sexual assault of a 40-year-old North Toledo woman. In that case, Colvin was charged with rape, aggravated robbery, kidnapping, and felonious assault. He was accused of beating and assaulting the woman in the cab of a tractor trailer in a parking lot in North Toledo.
All right. The woman told police she got into the truck at Summit and Magnolia Streets. She said she was punched in the ribs and face and threatened with a knife after she went with the gentleman to the warehouse. After being driven Around for more than an hour, she escaped from her attacker in a parking lot and was treated at a hospital.
Cold case investigators started reviewing similar unsolved slayings of women and testing DNA to determine whether evidence in the cases was consistent with Colvin's DNA.
The testing of Colvin's DNA matched evidence obtained in the investigations in sexual assaults of two women in 1998 and 2003, and was consistent in the slaying of a 33-year-old woman in 2003. So that wraps up the investigation. Now we are going to get into the arrest and trial. So hit it, Beth.
So on October 21st, 2005, Colvin was charged with the murder of Melissa Weber. If you recall, his DNA was found under her fingernails. Calling the 47-year-old Colvin twisted, Assistant Prosecutor Tim Braun compared him to Jack the Ripper, saying it's the same motivation. This is having sex with women you hate. He blames them for having sex for money, but he's paying for them. Then, to feel superior, he kills them. Mr. Braun also noted that letters that Colvin sent to another sex worker while he was in custody were vitriolic and laced with profanity, telling her she's worth nothing. And investigator Tim Ross, who spent several hours interviewing Colvin, agreed with Braun. I think it's a control thing. It's, I kill because I can.
Now, if I have not said it before, these white male prosecutors are trash. and I don't think that they, I just don't think that they get it. Like, they're the way that they're
describing
the story,
that, yeah,
it's like, what the fuck is wrong with you guys? Like, get some more details, get some more background. Like, there's more to it than just a dude who killed women. He has a past, they have a past. Get into it, and the jury deserves to know all of it. Anyway, let me take a quick step down from my soapbox.
Yeah, and you know, I don't think he was the same as Jack the Ripper. I don't know if Jack the Ripper actually had a sexual motivation.
He did not. I don't think he had sex with any of
no,
the women.
I don't know either.
If he had sex with, I think he just killed sex workers.
Yeah.
That's my understanding of true crime. So these cocksucker.
And I think he was he had some mental illness too, because he cut them apart, like he was interested
and
in their insides.
Their sexual,
yeah.
Yes, their insides and their sexual organs.
Yeah.
So
this
these
guy
cocksuckers
was not
can
doing that at all. So
all the bags of dicks. All the bags of dicks to these prosecutors. They just went about this all wrong. I mean, yes, we want the jury to get the facts. And we want the jury to make a good decision. But you are giving them trash-ass information.
You guys can
eat all the bags of dicks.
I understand they want to get a conviction, but let's not go overboard here.
You guys reel it in. Okay.
Reel it in a little bit,
Oh, me, oh, my. Colvin was put on trial for the murders of Jackie Simpson and Melissa Weber. But hours before the third day of his trial, the jury was dismissed and attorneys finalized a plea deal. Colvin stood and admitted one by one to killing Weber and Simpson, as well as Lily Summers, Jacqueline Thomas, and Valerie Jones. So he was like,
Yeah.
By the way, guys, there's more.
There's three more.
Okay.
So all five Toledo area women had been strangled or smothered, their bodies wrapped in sheets and blankets and dumped. Several were badly decomposed. Mr. Braun and another assistant prosecutor, J. Christopher Anderson, said forensics revealed that at least two of the women were dead long before their bodies were discarded. And they believe that Colvin may have carried the bodies of one or two of his victims with him until they were mummified. which is disgusting. Lord, but I don't know how they knew that.
I don't know either.
Because they're talking about forensics revealing that, but maybe it had something to do with the time of year. I don't know. Because if you kept the body with you in the winter and then dumped it in the spring, it would decompose differently. I don't know. Maybe.
Oh, you're probably... You're the OG of true crime.
I'm just guessing.
I don't fucking know.
I don't know. I'm just like trying to figure out how they would know that.
I'm going to go with what you say. Yeah, let's go with that.
Which is not unknown that killers hold on to bodies and then dump them later. It's not, it's not out of the realm of possibility for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're right. And, I just I'm surprised that he didn't reveal the details because he killed a lot of ladies.
Yeah, and he admitted to it. Yeah.
Admitted to all of it, but not these details. So
yeah.
Fuck.
Not that we know of anyway. There could be details out there. That we don't know.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And if any of you are listening and you know the fucking details about this bullshit, please get at us.
Yeah.
You know where to find us. So Lucas County Common Pleas Court Judge Thomas Osowick, that sounds like a racist name, gave Colvin 5 consecutive life sentences, but Colvin's confession allowed him to avoid the death penalty under the plea agreement reached with prosecutors. Some people were not happy about Colvin's negotiated life sentence, including the former sex worker who provided the critical details in her rape. "I wanted him to get the death penalty," she said. "I didn't get a choice. Those other girls didn't get a choice on whether they lived. Why should he get a choice?" Good question. Fair enough.
Yep. Judy Simpson, Jackie Simpson's mother, who testified during the first day of trial, said she was surprised by the plea that saved her daughter's killer from the death penalty. "I feel that my daughter is gone forever and he'll still be alive." But then she added that maybe investigators will be able to find more victims and other families will have some closure. And in that case, it's a good thing.
In this instance, clearly everybody is looking at the justice system and not one person is happy about it. And so I think that deserves a conversation, not for this podcast, but maybe some other one. Melissa Weber's mother, Teresa, said that she did not object to Colvin skipping death row because she wanted the confessions to come out for the family members' sakes. Weber told reporters, "Those parents and families needed to have closure. It would have been hard to live without knowing what happened to your child."
Yeah, that's true.
Uh-huh.
So Colvin did give up information about cases in which investigators otherwise would have little to no evidence against him. And ultimately, Colvin gave them the names of 6 sex workers that he said he had killed. And in March 2011, Delmas Colvin, at the age of 51, waived extradition and was returned to Atlantic County in New Jersey to face new charges against him, which included a murder indictment.
After learning that Colvin was being investigated for killings in Toledo, Ohio, the Atlantic County Prosecutor's Major Crimes Unit, just like on TV with Bobby, Major Crimes Unit traveled there and got enough evidence to indict Colvin for strangling Donna Lee White, who, if you recall, he murdered way back in 1987. So, good job, police.
And then in April of 2011, Colvin was sentenced to 30 years in prison after admitting that he'd killed White 24 years previously in 1987. Colvin said, as we told you about earlier, he strangled Donna Lee White and dumped her body in a vacant lot in Atlantic City. At the time he admitted to these facts, he was already serving a life sentence.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I guess.
Well, at least they know what happened, I guess.
Yeah. Currently serving multiple life sentences in an Ohio prison for the murders of Jackie Simpson, Melissa Weber, Lily Summers, Jacqueline Thomas, and Valerie Jones, plus 30 years for the murder of Donna Lee White in Atlantic City, New Jersey. I didn't find anything about the victims or their families, but the murders he was convicted of, I hope those families are resting with the fact that they received justice.
Yeah. So. I wish we could have found more information, but we didn't.
Me too. Yeah. Me too. We didn't. Sorry, guys. So now we're going to get into what we think made him. So take it away, Beth.
Like we said, unfortunately, we couldn't find anything about his early life. Nothing at all. There wasn't a lot of information about him available at all, really. Compare that to Keith Hunter Jesperson, a.k.a. the Happy Face Killer, who is pretty much the same type
white guy
of murderer, but he's white. There's tons and tons of information out there about him. And Colvin doesn't even have a wiki page. But if I were to guess, I'd say Colvin probably had a shitty early life full of abuse and neglect. Just a guess.
I will take your word as the OG of true crime and say that you were probably right. I really have no idea what the fuck made this sicko snap. I have said in the past, growing up black in America is traumatic in and of itself. I imagine that there was poverty. I imagine there was abuse that all contributed to how he developed. But I don't know for sure.
Right. Right. We don't know.
Find out about it. So he did say in his quote unquote letter to a sex worker that he was quote unquote courting while in custody, that she was worthless. And I wonder if a woman in his life told him at some point or made him feel that he was worthless. If somebody like put that energy on him, and that's what he was doing to the women that he ended up victimizing.
Yeah, probably a female adult could have been his mom or an aunt or, you know, whoever he grew up with.
Babysitter, anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I that's sort of where my mind went, but we really will
never know the
truth. Yeah. So
unless they give us more information.
Yeah. Hey, you think he would give us an interview?
Oh boy.
Hey, Mr. Colvin, you wanna do an interview with Fruit Loops? We're here.
We're here, yeah. You could talk to Wendy.
somebody asked me that. Somebody was like, have any of the killers reached out to you guys?
No.
Fuck no!
If they do, they can talk to Wendy, because I can't. No. I can't even.
Yeah. You want to talk? You want to talk to Wendy? Okay. What's your favorite reality TV show? Like, I'm not going to ask you real hard-hitting questions. I mean,
do you like to eat for dessert?
Ridiculous. Yes.
Do you like chocolate?
Are you a top or a bottom? Okay.
Well, that's important. Important to know. Oh, anyway.
Okay, so
let's get serious now.
Back to murder.
Okay.
Okay, so now we're going to get into our takeaways. So I've learned that sex work and truck driving are industries that are aligned. Interestingly enough, this case reminded me of the Happy Face Killer, as Beth mentioned earlier, Jesperson, God, if you guys have not heard the Happy Face Killer podcast, I don't know what you are doing.
What are you doing?
What are you doing? So Jesperson, which I did not know anything about Jesperson before that podcast. I'm sure the OG of True Crime Beth was already like, it was already on her radar. Mm-hmm. She probably knew all the details, but I did not. And I think there are more resources out there to protect sex workers of all genders now than there were back then, which is a good thing. Now, sex workers might be able to already be aware of a problematic John or truck driver through their networks, and they may not have been able to be privy to that information in the past. And so what's different and better is that we have the internet, we have social media,
and communication.
Sex workers are able to communicate with each other on I don't know, the government keeps trying to shut all this shit down, but the sex workers really, really rely on these networks to be able to communicate and keep each other safe. Yeah. And so that's good.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
So I did know about sex work and truckers, because I've known some truckers, and my ex-husband drove truck for a little while, and my daughter's husband drove truck for a little while, and my ex-husband's cousin drove truck, and you know, I've known a few truckers, and so I've heard stories. And for sex workers, it makes sense to frequent truck stops, because it's an easy way to find work. But like all sex work, it's dangerous. And there are quite a few serial killers who were truck drivers, not just Colvin and not just the Happy Face Killer. There's other ones too.
There's more, Beth?
Oh, yeah. And there are unsolved cases out there in which the authorities are convinced that truck drivers are the perpetrators. It's a good way to kill without being caught. You can pick up someone at a truck stop, somebody who's doing sex work, somebody who, you know, nobody's going to notice if they're missing, and then dump them in another state where they're less likely to be identified. And in fact, according to the FBI, if there is a such thing as an ideal profession for a serial killer, it may well be a long-haul truck driver.
All right. My brain just exploded because the FBI fucking said that? Are you kidding
me? Nope, that's what they said.
Holy shit. Yep. Holy shit. Wow. I'm going to give another gut shot. Whoa. Oh, that is crazy. Oh, my God. Are you serious?
Yep.
I mean, it makes
sense.
It makes total sense.
It does. When you think about it, you just never think about it. Yeah.
No. And you never think about the gals who are, I mean, I travel a lot for my job, and I've been to truck stops. Yeah. And I see the gals hanging out, right? And I know what they're doing. I know that they're just trying to make a living. And I just don't know what to say. It is
very sad. They're just trying to get by.
So they're just trying to make a living. They're just trying to survive. That's what we're all trying to do. Yeah. And I think. Yeah. And my therapist told me this the other day, that it's easy to appreciate people and the world and all of its inconsistencies and terrible things about the world if you remember that everybody in it is just trying to do the best that they can. That's it.
Yep.
Besides the serial killers, most people.
Aside from the serial killers who are trying to be the best serial killers that they can be, you know?
They're not included in the equation, but most of us are just trying to do the best that we can and get through the goddamn fucking day. Okay. All right. Whew. So, if you love true crime and you don't want to die, here's a tip for you. Oh, I was off key on that one.
You're okay, a little high.
Me. Anyway, what do you got for us, Ben?
Yeah. This segment is not intended to be victim blaming. We thought of this segment because I read somewhere that a lot of people listen to true crime because they want to know what they can do to be safer. But in my mind, this is not meant to blame the victims. It's just learning from other people's mistakes. Sometimes we have no suggestions for a particular episode, and then we will just offer up generic tips.
So I found a really cool link, and I will put it in the show notes. But it talked about, it gave just a list of several tips in order to keep yourself safe. So since Beth also has stuff, I'm going to put the link in the show notes, and I'm only going to read a few. Substance abuse and safe sex work can come to my mind. We've given resources for safe sex work and substance abuse in the past, and those will also be in the show notes. But since it's 2019, new year, new me, never trust a door chain lock, whether in a hotel or at a home. Never rely on door chain locks for safety. Even amateurs can often undermine them in seconds. Put tissues in peepholes at home or in a hotel, and keep your car fob key reachable from your bed. So I've said this before, but I keep my spare key fob on my bed. So in the event we are attacked at my home, I will be hitting the panic button so that the police can find you quickly, and that so it will also alert people around you.
Good idea. Yeah.
Uh-oh, something's going on. Also, this was my favorite. Keep your key, if you don't have a key fob for your car and you're walking to your car, keep your car key in your hand because it will get you into your car faster, but it will also be used as a weapon if necessary, like to stab people. I thought that was a dope-ass tip.
It is.
That's all I got.
All right. So we've been talking about truck drivers and sex work, but I didn't want to paint all truck drivers with a broad brush. Like I said, I've known some truck drivers. And you know what? Very few are murderers. Most of them are good people just driving trucks for a living.
Oh, really? Kind of like black people.
Yeah, exactly. So very few are murderers. And some, I guess, are good people.
Wendy's one of the good
ones. Yeah, she's one of the good ones. So in researching this case, I found a website called Truckers Against Trafficking. So this isn't a how not to get murdered tip. It's more of a how to help other people not to get murdered tip. So Truckers Against Trafficking provide resources and education to members of the trucking and travel plaza industry to combat domestic sex trafficking, which I thought was pretty cool. And they list some questions that you might ask a person that you suspect is being trafficked. Like, when was the last time you talked to your family? And do you keep your own money? As I would imagine, if somebody's being trafficked, they probably haven't spoken to their family in a long time. And somebody else is keeping their money. And red flags to look for, such as if the person doesn't know where they are, like what state they're in, and doesn't have control of their own ID or passport. And if you see what you suspect is human trafficking, if you are a trucker or even if you're not in the U.S., you can call a national human trafficking hotline, which is 1-888-373-7888, or you can text BeFree, which is 233-733. Polaris, a large D.C.-based anti-trafficking organization, runs the hotline and keeps all tips anonymous and confidential. And according to Truckers Against Trafficking, if a truck driver witnesses a crime in progress, they should call 911 first, but then call the hotline as well. because oftentimes drivers aren't really sure what they're looking at, if it's a human trafficking situation or not, which is why they instruct them to call the hotline as well, because then they can talk to a trained specialist who can help them assess the situation.
I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, I thought so
too. Thank you so much, Beth.
And specific tips called actionable information that are helpful to include when calling in a report. You should include the description of cars, make, model, color, license plate number, etc., anything you can remember, and descriptions of the people, like the height, weight, hair color, age, dates and times of occurrences, and addresses and locations. So just jot those down.
Beth, oh my God, let me open up my hip hop air horn, because this is a fire ass tip. Now, we just had the Super Bowl, and a lot of sex trafficking numbers go up in cities where there are these big ass events where rich men show up and they want sex. And so a hotel staff was trained on what to look for, but you as average, you know, just regular schmegular degular
person, you don't know what you're seeing,
might not know what to look for. Exactly. Now I also have to point out that Cindy McCain, in all of her Cindy McCain trashiness, was at the airport. I need to hold my head for this. She was at the airport and she witnessed a child who was mixed race and a parent who was not the same full race as this child. And she believed that the child may have been trafficked. Now, it turned out it was just a parent who had a mixed race child.
And there was nothing else going on, and they were just, you know, hanging out.
There was nothing else.
Oh my God.
Nope. It was just, she didn't see this person of color as a parent, and she saw this mixed race child as a victim. She did not know what she was looking at, and this is why white people, you really got to do better. And
so call the human trafficking hotline 1-888-373-7888 and ask them, what am I looking at?
Yeah, don't be a Cindy McCain, okay? All right.
Oh my God.
Beth, that really was a great tip. Thank you so much. So, I'm so ashamed she's from Arizona. Anyway, now we're going to get into some serial killer crime news. Extra, extra, read all about it. This story was in my Twitter feed, but I didn't click on it at first because I was, because it was about a white dude and I wasn't interested. But then I took a closer look, and there's this Canadian serial killer named Bruce MacArthur. He's been handed a life sentence for the murder of 8 men. The 67-year-old has been given 8 concurrent life sentences and will not be eligible for parole for 25 years. He had pleaded guilty to 8 counts of first-degree murder for the brutal killings of 8 men. Some of them were his close friends. Okay, fuck you. He gets all the bags of dicks. Most of the men, oh, we don't want to give him that because I think he is.
He would probably like that. Yeah.
Most of the men were men of color and members of the LGBTQ community. Their names were, I feel really bad. I might not get this pronunciation right, so please forgive me in advance. Their names were Salim Hassan, Andrew Kinsman, Majid Kayan, Dean Lisowick, Karushna Kumar Kanagarantanam. I'm so sorry.
Abdul Bazir.
Thank you. Faizi and Skandaraj Navarantanam and Sarush Mahmoodi. Oh my gosh, please forgive me for mispronouncing these men's names, but they did rest in power, y'all. They deserve to be spoken. But Justice McMahon called the crimes pure evil. He especially condemned MacArthur's exploitation of his victims' vulnerabilities. Two of the men were periodically homeless and struggled with addiction. One was a refugee who was about to be deported. Several were married men who had not revealed their sexuality to their families. But if MacArthur believed they would go unmissed, he miscalculated. Police knocked on MacArthur's door and found his next victim chained to the bed with a bag over his head. Pictures from... So the police caught him red-handed. pictures from MacArthur's computer revealed that he posed many of his dead victims naked, apart from a fur coat or hats, the court heard. MacArthur shaved some of the victims' heads and beards after strangling them. You can't do that to people. And kept bags of hair in Ziploc bags and shed near a Toronto cemetery. At least one had his eyes taped open and others had unlit cigars hanging from their lips. We might have to bend the rules of our show and cover this guy, but I wonder how much longer the press will cover this case given the color and sexual identities of the victims.
That's fucking nuts.
Fucking crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
This white guy went nuts. Yeah. And I think he thought that he would get away with it because they were like immigrants and brown and like nobody's going to care. So I could totally get away with it. But fuck you, not true.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
So now we are going to get into the part of our show where we shout out any content by people of color or any marginalized groups in general about any of people of color or marginalized groups or any true crime
goodies.
I do speak English. Goodies. So goodies. What do you have for us, Beth?
So I listened to a new podcast today.
Ooh, tell me all about it.
It's by one of my favorite actors, David Tennant.
Hmm.
He was on Doctor Who, and he was my favorite doctor. Anyway, he on this podcast he interviews other actors. And in the latest episode, and there are currently only two. It's that new. So he interviews Whoopi Goldberg. Yeah, I really enjoyed the interview, and I learned some things about Whoopi Goldberg that I didn't know. And so the podcast is called... David Tennant does a podcast with, and then names the person that he's doing the podcast with. So
I'm biting my lip because I cannot wait to fucking listen
to this. Yeah, it's good. It's good.
Right now. Oh, man. Okay. Thank you so
much. It was really interesting. Yeah. So what do you got?
Okay. So, y'all know Tasty from Orange is the New Black.
Oh, yeah. I love
her. She's a trained performer. Like she went to Juilliard.
Wow.
They call it the yard. Like she knows what she's doing as far as performing goes. And she released a song this week. And it is so empowering. It is called Black Woman. And she talks about being cornbread fed, sweet tea sipping. Oh my God. And having big thighs and beautiful hair and skin that glistens. I can't stop listening to
That's
it.
That's awesome.
So I recommend that if you are a black woman or not, it's an empowering song. Like, listen to this before you go into your next board meeting. Like,
all right.
You will feel like 1,000%
strong and
quick. Yeah. You'll strong and confident. You're going to wake up that queer black man that's inside your soul, and he is going to carry you forward. So,
all right.
Listen to I'm a Black Woman by Tasty. Anyway,
right on.
So
I also wanted to give a quick update. In the last episode, we were talking about a podcast where they talked about DNA and how the Golden State Killer was caught. And I just wanted to mention that I believe the podcast, I'm not 100% sure because I haven't listened to it again. I haven't had time, but I believe the podcast that I was referring to was season 4 of Criminology. The first couple of episodes.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you, Beth.
You're welcome.
We love you, Beth. You're the best. Beth, where can the people find us?
Our website is fruitloopspod.com. Our Facebook page is Fruit Loops Pod. And our discussion group is Fruit Loops Pod Discussion on Facebook. We are also on Twitter and Instagram at Fruit Loops Pod, and links to our sources will be in our footnotes. If you want to support the show, you can send us a donation on the Cash App, which you can download to your phone, or you can find online at cash.me/$FruitLoopsPod, or you can become a monthly patron through our Podbean patron page. This will help us pay for things like our website and pod hosting. There's no minimum and no commitment. Even a dollar would help.
That's right, y'all. Now, this is a weekly podcast and new episodes drop every Thursday. So until next time, look alive, guys. It's crazy out there.